Sean Nicholson, Head of Sales and Distribution for 1290 Funds and Equitable Investment Management LLC, the fund's investment advisor. Welcome to another edition of our podcast series. Our podcasts seek to offer insights into investing and markets with a long-term strategic view. In this podcast, Chief Investment Officer Ken Kozlowski spends about 15 minutes with Invesco evaluating the market for hard assets. You learn about how hard assets, for example, real estate, infrastructure, and even commodities like oil, may offer a path to diversification in today's economy. The interview closes out with the perspective of how China's economic reopening may impact the global markets. I'm certain you'll find this information useful. Now, let's listen in. Hello, everyone. Ken Kozlowski here. Today, we're turning our attention towards sectors that some individuals may find intimidating to spend time with Invesco's head of listed real assets, Darren Turner. Darren's bio is all about the Lone Star State, with multiple degrees from Texas schools in business and real estate. Today's rising interest rate environment with recessionary rumbles in the background seems to be a good time to talk about hard assets like real estate, metals, agriculture, and energy. The listed real assets team draws on a deep bench with more than 25 investment professionals dedicated to this space. They average about 25 years of experience in business as well. Welcome, Darren, and let's dive right in. So your team recently reported to us that the economic data releases continue to offer a picture of very weak leading indicators, but relatively resilient actual data. As you put it so succinctly, key government bond yield curves remain inverted, which would point to economic weakness. However, high yield credit spreads have tightened and equity markets were showing some positive trends as investors appear to have a more risk-on appetite. So tell us how the environment in the latter part of 2022 benefited from hard asset companies and investors. Why don't you start with real estate?
Sure. Thank you, Ken, and really appreciate the time today. So as you just outlined, the second half of 2022 and then actually even the beginning of 2023 was really characterized by relatively robust economic growth and inflation profile that was generally accelerating. And for the U.S. specifically, a very strong U.S. consumer as related to spending trends, but then also excess savings. Now, for hard assets specifically, what that has meant was as inflation was accelerating, those areas of the market that have the most direct ties to inflation did reasonably well in that environment. And as we go through this conversation, I'll probably provide more details by underlying sector. Now, for real estate specifically, we would characterize real estate as having an indirect hedge to inflation. And by that, what I mean is my direct input costs on building new buildings, which includes lumber, concrete, obviously labor. As inflation's increasing, my costs to build that new building are also rising. Now, what that means as an existing property holder is that market rents should be moving higher as well to compensate those new developers. And so in those types of periods, real estate's generally viewed as a store of value. Now, for the second half of 2022, real estate was relatively volatile as an asset class. And so even though you had some of those positive trends as relates to inflation, store of value, as interest rates moved higher, real estate is one of the more sensitive real asset sectors to interest rates. And so that's been a constant battle for real estate investors. It's still positive fundamentals, but from a valuation standpoint, just the concern of what the Fed is going to have to continue to do and what that can eventually mean for rates and then also valuations for real estate.
As a follow-on, you invest in a number of sectors that our shareholders may not know much about. So why is fertilizer, for instance, along with other agricultural sectors, finding favor now?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So as you highlighted, some of the areas that we look to invest is not just something that you would generally think about, fertilizer companies being a great example. And so when you look at fertilizer supply, Russia produces about 25% of world fertilization. And so even though fertilizers were not part of the sanctions put on Russia, they dramatically reduced their supply to try to increase the amount of price in the market. And so if you're a fertilizer company that had access to that supply, had already pre-booked that, you saw your cash flows continue to rise as the prices of fertilizers were rising. Now, additionally, what you've seen is that with the reopening of China, which has taken quite some time versus the rest of the world, China is one of the largest buyers of almost everything related to energy and also agricultural products. And so they are very much a key aspect, whether it be fertilizer companies, but also soy and corn companies as well. And so that market reopening, that demand increasing has really provided a very positive backdrop for those types of companies focused in that area.
And can you say a few words about natural resources, which added a ton of value last year? Can you tell us about energy as an investment right now?
Sure. So as you just highlighted, when you look at 2022, energy was one of the best performing asset classes in the world. Now, mostly driven by two things. One, continuing positive economic growth. And so as economic growth moves higher, your demand for energy products generally coincides with that. Additionally, just because of some of the sanctions that were put on Russia, overall supply was relatively limited last year as well. And so you saw that translate into much more robust and positive cash flows at the energy-related companies. Now, on a go-forward basis, what we still believe in is you've had a severe lack of capital investment in energy-related assets almost for the past decade. And so the U.S. is a prime example of this. We went through periods really going up until 2014 where we spent significant capital building out not only our shale drilling aspect, but also the associated pipelines. We've now, again, gone a decade without spending capital to increase that level of production. And so even though our current view is that the later half of 23 could be mirrored with some level of economic deterioration, the amount of supply in the market is likely to continue to be somewhat limited. And so we continue to believe in much more of a supply-demand balance type of market. And historically, when you're dealing with those areas, that is a relative positive for energy-related companies.
Infrastructure is a sector that can cover a lot of different industries. Can you give us a sense where investors might be finding value in these areas?
Yeah, infrastructure is an incredibly interesting asset class. And so, again, as you highlighted, it can cover multiple areas within a specific country. We view infrastructure as the backbone of economic growth. Where we're generally looking for value, or other investors are today, are on those aspects of infrastructure that can have the most direct linkage to increases in inflation. So within infrastructure companies, underlying contracts, they normally have a CPI rider that can adjust every single year. So you're actually able to capture that uplift or that increase in what inflation has been. So what are some of those areas that we're looking at? So it'd be places like European towers. So the cell phone tower companies where your cell phone actually connects to provide you service. Those leases are generally structured with inflation riders on them. And so you have very much long-term demand as it relates to overall data usage. And again, I get to, as a cell phone tower company, capture that uplift in what CPI has been. Additionally, you've seen investors look to areas in Asia, as we highlighted earlier with the China reopening. And so areas like Asian toll roads, and specifically in whether it be Hong Kong or China, where you've seen a level of increased demand or just increased drivers on the road, as you've had an overall reopening. And that, in most investors' view, is still a two-year window of increasing traffic patterns there. The last area I would actually say can be in places like water utilities in the U.S. Now, again, this is somewhat based upon a view of the potential for an economic decline, but water utilities are really the most basic service that you can be providing your underlying customer or most basic service in an economy. Independent upon economic growth, your water usage basically stays the same. And so what people have been looking for within these types of companies is that stability of cash flow. And how is that currently valued if we were to eventually see interest rates decline because of economic deterioration?
You've recently made a case for a more defensive posture in coming months. What does defensive mean in terms of real assets?
And so very similar to what I was just discussing with water utilities, defensive in real assets means stability of cash flow. And so I want a stable cash flow profile that has very little economic sensitivity. And so water utilities, as I just mentioned previously, is a perfect example. Even in a recession, the amount of water that you use in your home is generally pretty static. And so that's a very defensive cash flow stream. Now, outside of that, even in areas like real estate, you have segments of real estate such as manufactured housing, medical office, which also provide very durable, long-term, stable cash flows independent of the economic environment. And so as we've looked at history, your sensitivity to movement in GDP, for every 100 basis points in GDP, manufactured homes cash flows move only 1%. Same with medical office. It's because your underlying demand drivers can be outside of what the economic environment is. And so we're always looking at those aspects. What provides me that long-term stable view of cash flows within real assets versus what our underlying economic outlook might be?
Another big picture question. From real estate to supply chains to agriculture to airports, China has played a big role in recent years in many sectors you follow. What are the broader implications of a Chinese economic recovery for global real asset investors?
Yeah, China is absolutely important as we think about overall global demand drivers within real assets. So within our asset class, as I highlighted, natural resources, agriculture type companies, metals and mining, all of those companies you've seen historically been driven by the increased demand coming out of China as they've continued to have a long path of positive economic growth. And more importantly, as the citizens in that country move from below what I'd say median income to moving into a higher range of where they're buying more goods. And so a reopening of that economy really continues this multi-decade long trend that we've seen of increasing demand for most of those natural resources. Now, what we'd say is interesting this time as well is that with some of the view of reshoring or onshoring due to some of the logistic issues that happened during COVID, you've seen certain countries, the US is a great example of this, wanting to bring back some manufacturing from China to the US. Now, what that can mean as China reopens is that your global trade routes can be impacted depending upon where am I manufacturing versus where the goods need to go. And so we've seen impacts on the port side within real assets as well. Historically, certain areas, again, out of China, were just looking at exporting goods to the US. You've now seen some of those assets actually look to switch and actually be importing goods because of the underlying Chinese consumer demand. And so we continue to believe that China, yes, is going to play an important role as you think about investing in hard assets, really for the coming decade.
And finally, let's take a step back and answer one question important to individual investors. Hard assets used to be considered an important hedge against economic decline in a portfolio. In 2023, how do you believe hard assets fit into a traditional asset allocation?
Yeah, and so what we would say is hard assets have a unique position in their portfolio. And I'll hit on a couple different characteristics. So one is generally a level of recurring income or yield. They can provide a cash flow supplement versus other areas like fixed income. Now, in the current environment, one of the most important characteristics has been the inflation sensitivity. Obviously, before the past 24 months, inflation hadn't been a major concern for investors, but what you've seen is that you normally need to be worried about unexpected inflation. And that's normally when real assets really provide you that benefit in your portfolio, like we've seen over the past 12 months. Now, lastly, as you outlined, Ken, it's just the defensive nature of what real assets can provide. I hit on the stability of cash flow that you can see within real assets, especially versus general equities. But maybe even just importantly, is the stability of dividend that comes with a lot of these companies. Infrastructure, as an example, on an index basis, has not seen a dividend decline in over 25 years. So even during the global financial crisis, infrastructure companies as a whole actually were still increasing dividends. And so that can play a very important role as people think about planning long-term in their portfolios. And so as we think about our outlook for 2023, we think real asset companies that provide you that stability of cash flow with an ability to still increase that cash flow if inflation remains a concern, as a very unique type of asset to have in your portfolio today. And so we think it's something that investors historically haven't spent as much time thinking about, but we would say this is the current environment where investors really need to relook at what the allocation can be and what real assets can provide in your portfolio.
Darren, thanks for your insights and time with us today. This has been incredibly helpful. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Hello again, everyone. Sean Nicholson here. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and are armed with a better understanding of how hard assets may fit into an overall investment allocation. Invesco's global hard assets strategy is available through various Equitable variable insurance and variable annuity products. Interested? We encourage you to log on to equitable-funds.com to take a look at the prospectus. For now, have a great day, and we plan to keep these discussions going throughout the coming months.
This discussion is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice. The views and opinions expressed are provided by the speakers as of the date of their contributions and do not necessarily represent the views of Equitable Investment Management Group, LLC, or its affiliates. Any such views and opinions are subject to change at any time based on market or other conditions and are not intended to be a forecast of future events, a guarantee of future results, or investment advice. Securities and sectors referenced should not be construed as a solicitation or recommendation or be used as the sole basis for any investment decision. The information presented is not intended to constitute an investment recommendation for or advice to any specific person.